Sairam, dear listeners, and welcome to today's segment of Afternoon Satsang. This week, we will be continuing where we left off last week in the discussion of one of the parts in the Navveda Bhakti Marga, which is Archanam. I think that is the sixth one. So, last week we had discussed the example that Bhagwan has given for Archanam, which is Emperor Prithu, after whom the world or the Mother Earth has been named as Prithvi. Apart from that, we also had a very detailed discussion on this path, that is Archanam, which means offering. So we had a discussion asking whether God is really in need of our offerings. Does God need our offerings? At the end of that enlightening discussion, we realized that it is not God who requires our offerings, but we ourselves who need offerings to God for our own benefit. We concluded last week with Bhagwan's discourse on what is the actual meaning of Archanam, and this week we will be going into that into as much depth as we can, into what Bhagwan had said in that discourse as to what is the actual and true meaning of Archanam. But before we do all that, on behalf of Prem, who is with me here, and all our listeners from around the globe, I would like to offer our most humble and grateful pranams at the lotus feet of our beloved Bhagwan, the eternal listener who is always inspiring us, who is always listening to us, witnessing us and guiding us. With gratitude to him, with prayers that he guides this discussion, we begin by offering our humble salutations at his lotus feet.
Saram Arvind and Saram, dear listeners. I think we played that very, very profound clip at the end of last week's discussion, where Swami spoke a little about, you know, the Indian tradition of you always wanting to offer something when you go to a temple. Swami said, you do something, you just pick up, you know, buy some flowers, or buy a coconut or something, and you go and try to offer. And then probably as a result of that, you have boards even in the ashram. You know, when you go to the Ganesh temple, there's a board which says, offerings not permitted. Because we always have that eagerness to offer, and we are happy to offer simpler things. I think that's the thing with us. There's a saying in Tamil which they used to say very often. I've heard it so many times growing up. It used to mean that on the way to a Ganesh temple, you pick up a coconut from the wayside shop. Not even buy it. You pick it up from there and you go inside the temple and offer that to God. And you know, it's such a profound thing, because that's exactly what we do with everyday life. And you know, we will be definitely going into that, but most of our discussion today, as we mentioned last week, will be around that shloka in Gita which Krishna says about what we are supposed to offer to God, and how we have actually got it mixed up, because we have confused it to be literal, because he says that you have to offer a flower, a leaf, water and fruit. And we literally stick to those articles and we offer that. Then there is definitely value in that, because you at least have the idea or that emotion and attitude to offer something. But it's not supposed to be something which terminates there. You have to go beyond that. And probably that's what we're going to take a cue from Swami and discuss about today.
I think, you know, Prem, there are two angles to this discussion. Sides to this discussion. One is from a devotee side, devotee's perspective. One is from God's perspective. Mm-hmm. See, last week we had the discussion as to God has no need for our offerings. And Archanam is more needed for the devotee than for the Lord. So, when we come to the shloka, I think it is shloka number 26 in chapter 9 of the Bhagavad Gita. The chapter is supposed to confide the most confidential knowledge. In that, the first two lines of the shloka runs as patram pushpam phalam toyam yome bhaktya prayachati. One who offers patram pushpam phalam and toyam with devotion to me, you know, that is enough. That's what Krishna is saying. So I think this is from God's perspective. It just highlights the fact that God has no need of our offerings, because he's saying, even if you give me a leaf, even if you give me a fruit, if you give me a flower or even some water, that's enough for me. There's nothing that you have to make a great offering. So this is God's perspective of Archanam, that I don't need anything, even this is enough. But I think our perspective comes in the second line, where Krishna says, Yo me bhaktya prayachati, though one who offers this to me with devotion.
Right.
That devotion is something that we have to lay emphasis on, we have to give importance to and try to inculcate. Because when God says leaf, flower, fruit, it doesn't mean exactly leaf, flower or fruit. He's just using these terms, and possibly it's like using an etc. there. Anything like this. Anything of this with devotion is enough for me. That's what he's saying. So instead of fixating on phalam pushpam patram toyam, I think we have to focus on the devotion part, because after all, archanam is part of the Navavidha Bhakti Marga. It is one of the paths of devotion. So the emphasis always has to be on devotion and not on the particulars, that is flower, fruit, leaf or water.
Right. And there is another reason why I feel, you know, most of our rituals entail something which has to be done physically.
Mm.
You know, many of these things, even if you do Sandhya Vandanam, you would see that, you know, they would take a few droplets of water and drink it.
Mm.
And they would consider it like, I'm taking this now, I'm purifying this, I'm offering this. Or, you know, even when we do that archanam, you know, speaking about archanam, but when you do that traditional archanam, they would say, they would call out names of the Lord. And for every time when you say that I offer you, you know, you offer a bunch of flowers. In many ways, I would see this as, you know, when we were children, let's say we've been taught arithmetics. And oftentimes we would be taught to do this, you know, you count 4 plus 5. They would say 4 in the mind, 5 in the hand. And you would, you count that 5 in your hand literally.
With the fingers.
With your fingers. But this is a, you know, here is a mental exercise that you're doing. You attach it to a physical exercise so that that mental exercise becomes easy to perform.
Hmm.
Okay, and over a period of time, I've seen many of my classmates, even through graduation, would still do that sometimes,
mm-hmm.
you know, out of habit. When they're doing a quick calculation, you'd see that, and you wouldn't realize that you'll be saying that, you know, 5 in the mind, 4 in the hand, you know, that quickly. It's all of these rituals when you say that you offer flowers, you offer fruit. It's like that. A physical offering has been added to what needs to be a subtle offering, that at some time you're going to leave back this physical offering and then you go to the subtle offering. But we, probably many of us, stick to the physical offering because it's easier to do, right?
It's easier and we forget the actual part of it. You know, in its purest and truest form, there are several examples from our scriptures which show that archanam is a sure shot way to lead you to the Lord. Let's take, for example, patram or leaf. I think this was also explained in brief by Bhagwan in the discourse clip that we played last week. The example is of
Draupadi.
Patram is leaf.
Right, sorry. Yes.
This is Subhadra and Rukmini, the Tulabharam story.
Tulabharam.
The example given is of Rukmini, where it has so happened that Satyabhama is possessive of Lord Krishna and she decides to keep Krishna to herself. So the ritual, so-called ritual, in order to gain ownership on Lord Krishna is to donate Krishna to a Brahmin and then buy back Krishna from that Brahmin for whatever price he asks. So Satyabhama donates Lord Krishna to Narada, Sage Narada, and Sage Narada demands as his price wealth equivalent to the weight of Lord Krishna.
Mm.
Any wealth equivalent to the weight of Lord Krishna. So Satyabhama is very confident because she is the queen and Lord Krishna is placed on one side of the scales, huge scales, and on the other side gold, ornament, jewel, everything in the kingdom is, you know, put on the scales to balance Lord Krishna. But the weighing scales don't tilt at all. Lord Krishna is firmly down and anything you add on the other side, elephant loads of gold, jewelry, everything, nothing seems to be moving the scales. That is when Satyabhama realizes that she may not be having the ability to buy back Krishna. So Krishna is lost forever, not only for herself but for everyone, because Narada is going to take away Lord Krishna. At that time she runs desperately to the other queen, Rukmini. You know, there's a difference between Satyabhama's devotion and Rukmini's devotion. Rukmini would always say that I belong to Krishna. While Satyabhama would say that Krishna belongs to me, one was possessive, the other one actually sublimated her existence into Krishna's existence. That difference gets highlighted because when Rukmini comes to know this, she is shocked. She has no idea that all this is going on. She doesn't even know that she is actually the root cause for Satyabhama to do this, because Satyabhama feels that Krishna is partial towards Rukmini. She wants Krishna all to herself. Rukmini just forgets everything, just runs, you know, picks up a tulsi leaf, just tells Krishna with all her heart, with love, and places it on the scale. And the scale that couldn't be toppled by tons of gold is moved by one little leaf. And it is moved because actually Lord Krishna is moved by her devotion. It is devotion that moves the Lord and not the wealth and any other thing. So one leaf that she offered was enough to win over Lord Krishna. And that is the story of the Krishna Tulabharam. Of course, Swami gives another message through the same story, saying that the form of the Lord, the mesmerizing, beautiful form of the Lord, can only be matched by the name. Only by the name can it be matched. Nothing else. No other substitute for the Lord's form. That's a strong message that we require today, especially when the physical form is absent and lots of people are coming up with substitutes for the physical form of the Lord. I think we should listen to the words of our dear Swami and learn that the only substitute for the Lord's form is the Lord's name. So that is the other message also that Swami gives through this. But this is the example that is often quoted to show that even a leaf offered with love is sufficient to move the Lord, literally and figuratively.
Right, and as you said, was an example which Swami himself quoted, and a traditional example which is given when you say that you offer a leaf to God, and probably tulsi leaf is considered sacred too, and you know, you always, when we do our worship, we do the tulsi part, probably we don't do that devotion part which Rukmini did, because you know, when you take the Lord's name with that much devotion, that equates the Lord's form. Talking about the offering of flowers, whenever we offer flowers in a worship, there's a certain long code of conduct to the way you offer flowers. They say that the flower that you pluck should be right from the branch. It should not have fallen down. It should not be used. And you should not smell that flower. You know, that's one more thing which, you know, as children we would do that.
Yes, I've got scolded many times.
Flowers will be brought and you'll be so attracted, you'll smell it, especially if it's a beautiful rose or something.
Jasmine.
Right, and you'd get spanked, and they say that, how can you smell the flower before offering it to God? So there is that, that idea that some things which have to be offered to God have to be maintained sacrosanct, away from your touch. And there is this very beautiful story which, it's very famous as the story of Andal. She's supposed to be one of the other great devotees of Lord Vishnu.
She's one of the
Alvars.
Alvars, yes.
Her father also was one of the Alvars, I think. Vishnu Chitta is his name. And incidentally, he finds Andal as a small child under the Tulsi Madam. Tulsi Madam, whatever you call that.
The place where the tulsi is
grown. Every house used to have traditionally that tulsi plant which they would worship. And one fine day he finds this baby under the, this tulsi plant, and he brings it up as his own daughter. So this Vishnu Chitta had this habit of making the garland which used to be used for that local deity, Vishnu, the local temple. So he would, get up early in the morning, have his bath, and in a very ritualistic manner prepare that garland, a very beautiful garland. He would himself go and pluck the flowers, and then he would string it into that garland. And then he would leave it, he would go for a second bath, come back, then take the garland, and then he would offer it to that, temple.
Hmm.
So eventually, as this daughter grew up, she started doing part of that job. So what would happen is, when he would go for his bath, she would wear that garland and see if it is looking good.
Hmm.
When you're offering it to God, when it is worn by the deity, it should look good on him. So she wears it herself, and she says, is it looking good? And she also imagines herself to be, Lord Vishnu's bride.
Hmm.
That's her form of devotion. So she wears it, and she says, yeah, it's fine. And she then, keeps it where her father takes it from. And the father goes and offers it. And one fine day, he finds that there is a few strands of hair in that garland.
Hmm.
And that's when it occurs to him that probably his daughter has been wearing the garlands. So he is really perturbed by it. He comes back and he starts the whole ritual again, gets fresh flowers, makes fresh garland. And this time when he goes to the, you know, sanctum sanctorum, he puts the garland around the deity, but it snaps and falls down. So then again he ties it a firmer knot this time. Again he puts it and again it snaps and falls down. So he's wondering what has happened. And then, you know, that night he's very disturbed and he goes to sleep. Lord Vishnu comes in his dream and he says, "I don't want your garland." Because that garland does not have the scent of Andal.
By the scent of Andal, obviously he's referring to the devotion.
Right, he meant that devotion.
The fragrance.
He says, "Give me only that garland which he has already worn and bring it to me." So, you know, when we say that when you offer flowers to Swami, you know, you offer it with all that which entails. You don't smell it, you don't touch it, you don't drop it down. But beautiful incident which shows that it's not the flower, but it's really the emotion with which you offer the
flower. Fragrance of devotion. And I think when they say that the fragrance of devotion should be offered only to the Lord, I think that is the actual meaning when they say it should be offered fresh. You should not, you know, nobody else should smell it.
Right.
I'm reminded of an incident in this regard, you know, that should offer it first to the Lord. It's not actually the smell of the flowers, but our own devotion. Let your devotion be to the Lord and Lord alone and nothing else. Nobody else and nothing else, because we often offer it to the world and then to God. Swami would often give this example, you know, he would say that whenever a feast is cooked at home, you put everything on a leaf and offer that first to God as naivedyam, and then only you partake the food. Swami would say that you will never eat all the food and the torn leaf which you usually throw it for the animals, cows to eat, that you don't offer to the Lord. So I think that is the meaning when it is said that don't smell the flower, don't, you know, touch it, let it be offered fresh to the Lord. The incident that I remembered, I think I shall narrate it a little later in the same satsang.
Okay.
When we come to the actual meaning what Swami gives to the offering of the flower. I shall now, you know, move on to the other one. You know, we gave an example for pushpam, patram, like that for phalam. Phalam means fruit. We have the example in the Ramayana. We have been discussing that during our Ram Katha Rasa Vahini also, where Shabari is waiting for Rama for so many years for him to come, because that's what her guru has told her. I think Matanga Muni is her guru.
Right.
He has told her that Rama will come, God will come here, you wait for him. So for years, she gets up early in the morning, clears the pathway, removes the thorn, collects fruits, collects flowers, clears everything in her hut, waits for the Lord, only to find out that by the end of the day he has not come. Again the process begins the next day, and all her life she has been living in this hope, in this anticipation and in this devotion alone. Finally Rama comes home and she's so thrilled. After welcoming him in, she decides to offer him fruits that she has collected. I think they were what we call as bear fruits.
Okay.
B-E-R, bear, or I don't know what it's called in English. They're berries, kind of berries only. The same kind of berries, you know, Swami sometimes used to distribute to all of us on Shivratri, during Shivratri. So these fruits, she has collected them, berries which I think they were growing wild over there. Just before offering to Rama, she feels, "Oh God, how do I know which ones are sweet, which ones are not?" She wanted to give only the best to Rama, and so she does something that is unthinkable for anybody else. She bites into each berry, tasting each berry, and only which is sweet, she offers to the Lord. See, in the case of Andal, it was, don't smell the flowers, don't use the flowers which are offering to the Lord. Here, she's eating directly and then giving leftover food. Just previously, I was quoting how Swami tells in the discourse that you should offer a fresh leaf full of food, not something that has been already tasted. But here was she tasting and giving, and Lakshmana is standing there and seeing this and feeling insulted, because he's thinking, what does this lady think? Does she think that my brother is some commoner? He's a prince, you know, he's a king, the emperor, and she's offering such things. And at that, precisely at that point in time, Rama tells Lakshmana, "Do you know how sweet these fruits are? You also have it." So not only does Rama eat those half-eaten fruits, he makes Lakshmana also eat it, and Lakshmana also then agrees that they are indeed sweet. And here also again, I think that sweetness is a metaphor. It's not the physical sweetness of the fruit, but the sweetness of Shabari's devotion. So that is That is the example that is given for a fruit offering that is accepted by the Lord.
Right, and it just reminds me once, I think during the Ganesh Chaturthi festival or something, we all have these Ganeshas in each one's room and all of that. So when we were staying outside the ashram, we had installed a Ganesha in one of the old students' houses and we used to do worship for that. Mm-hmm. So one of the days we decided to make some prasadam for that, and we made this what you call panchamritam. You do it with five types of fruits and then milk and honey and all of that. So one of the boys remembered that usually there's a camphor flavor in that, right? So he said, oh, we have to add camphor to it. Apparently, I think that camphor which is used for cooking is sometimes...
Absolutely different, highly different pure grade.
So none of us knew that because none of us knew cooking. So we put the usual camphor which you use for aarti, right? Mm-hmm. And that one doesn't give you a fragrance when it's put in food.
Correct.
Only when you eat it, you...
You get that taste which hits you.
So we put one pellet and we smelt it. There was no camphor smell. You put the second pellet and still no camphor smell. I think we put some three or four camphor pellets in that. And there was no camphor smell coming out of it. So we said, okay, we tasted it and it was like terribly bitter. We didn't know what to do. So we told one of the boys to go and ask his mother what he should do. So this boy very sincerely went and asked his mother that, you know what do you do if you put too much camphor in the prasadam? So she asked, what did you do? So he explained the whole process and he said, we smelt it, we didn't get the camphor smell. And she was like, what? You smelt the prasadam? I said, yeah, but there was no smell and so we tasted it. What? You tasted the prasadam? He said, in what way is that prasadam? You can go and dump it. No, when we think of it now...
Naivedyam.
No, when you think of it now, I think having lived with Swami and having heard this story of Shabari so many times, it's almost inbuilt in us that you have to offer to Swami what is sweet and what is, probably worth offering.
See, in our home, we have this practice that whatever is freshly cooked is first offered to Swami.
Right.
We offer to Swami breakfast, lunch and dinner. But every time, as you said, because of growing up with Swami, it has so happened that as my mother or my dad, they're cooking on the stove, from the stove itself, I just pick up to taste and see how it's good. And she says, you've not yet offered to Swami. This dialogue happens even to this day. And I always say, I'm doing like Shabari. I'm tasting whether it's fit enough to be offered or not, So as you said.
Right. But it's a beautiful message. Of course, we are not suggesting that every prasadam has to be offered like that. But the message which Mother Shabari gave is, when it is not, I offer whatever I have to God. I also refine what I have and I, pick the best and offer. So when you don't have the best, you transform what you have to the best and then you offer to God. I think that's the emotion. We will see it further when you speak of an offering. Are you supposed to offer only what is good to God or offer everything to God? I think that will again become a dilemma. But at least this first emotion that what I offer to God should be sweet, palatable and to His liking. I think that is a very, very important emotion which, Mother Shabari was standing for.
If people found Mother Shabari's offerings as, oh my God, how could she do it? Then the next one for Toyam is water. What, Lord says, I'm happy with the offering of water. There is one of these Nayanmars. Alvars are the devotees of Lord Vishnu, Nayanmars are the devotees of Lord Shiva. His name is Kannappa. I remember there's a Kannada movie made on him and I remember watching it with great glee. It's an amazing story, because this is a tribal, a hunter who falls in love with Shiva. Who falls in love in Shiva that he loses all other liking in life. He stops, he's not interested in his own wives, he's not interested in anything else. He's in love with Shiva. So every day he feels like what you would do for your family member. Get food for them, take care of them. That's what he decides to do for Lord Shiva. And this is a temple in the forest. Because it's in the forest, the priest comes only in the morning after daybreak. And before sunset, he leaves. He goes away because it's a forest and there are wild animals. But Kannappa at the end of his days hunting, and because he's a hunter, he finishes hunting. At the end of the day, he comes to the temple.
Mm-hmm.
So when he comes to the temple, what he does is he cleans the altar and makes his own offerings. What are his offerings? Meat. And sometimes he comes and says, Lord, I brought you meat dipped in honey. Because this is what he loves and that is what he wishes to offer to the Lord. The thing is, it is shown so beautifully that when he goes to collect, he is a hunter, he doesn't have all these paraphernalia. So he takes the meat, he cooks it over a raw fire, he wraps it in a big leaf. He takes flowers and he fixes them in his headband. You know, a band that he's wearing around his forehead. Between his forehead and the band, he inserts flowers, right, which he gets to offer. And he's wondering, now, where do I get water from? How do I take water? He doesn't have that kamandalu and all those paraphernalia. So, shockingly, he carries the water in his mouth. And so the first thing he does is, you know, what we will call as spitting. He comes and spits water on the lingam. And the next morning when the priest comes, he's shocked to see, he's thinking that somebody has defiled the temple. Because there is meat, there is, you know, all stink, there is all funny things. And though every day he cleans it. Which wild animal has come here? He's wondering. He cleans the temple and he again does and goes, and next day again he finds this happening. So story goes that goddess Mother Parvati asks Lord Shiva as to who is more dear to you? The one who is doing Archanam worship. Because Archanam actually means this traditional worship.
Right.
If you see the traditional worship for any god that we do, whether it's Ganesha or Shiva, it all starts with welcoming the Lord, giving, offering him a seat, offering him food, drink, music, everything. It's basically like entertaining God as a guest at your home for the duration of the puja, of the worship. That's how anything is. So Parvati asks whether you like the archanam that is being done by the priest or this fellow's, you know, what he's doing innocently. And Lord Shiva says, you see for yourself, the one who loves me more dearly is the one whom I love. Because Lord Shiva says, for me, what they offer doesn't matter. How they offer it matters. And as a test, what Lord Shiva does is, when the priest comes next day, the lingam sprouts eyes. And eyes open on the lingam. And the priest is so thrilled. Priest is so thrilled. He says, Lord, you have finally, you know, woken up to my devotion. And I'm so grateful. I'm so happy. And he's so thrilled. And even as he's exulting in that thrill, one of the eyes on the lingam starts bleeding. Now he's shocked. The priest doesn't know what to do. He tries to stop the bleeding with leaves and flowers, whatever he has, with some kind of a bandage. It just doesn't stop. And appears as though the Lord, who has just now got eyes, is now going to go blind in one eye because of the excessive bleeding. Fearing this to be a bad omen, the priest runs away. That is when in the evening Kannappa comes. And actually, I don't know what's the name of this hunter. He is now famous as Kannappa. Kann means eyes. Kannappa. The one... Right. Of eyes, you know. Because what happens is, when he sees Lord Shiva's eye bleeding, without further thought, he pulls out an arrow from his quiver, plucks out his own eye, and then offers it to Lord Shiva and says, use this eye, O Lord, and be fine. And he places his eye in the place of Lord Shiva's eye. He does some kind of a crude surgery there. And that eye is now fine. It has stopped bleeding. And he's so happy. That is when the second eye of Lord Shiva starts bleeding. Now Kannappa is worried. And we will think that he is worried because he is wondering, now if I give my other eye, what will happen? I will be blind. But you know, the beautiful thing is that Kannappa is not worried as to what will happen to me. He is worried as to, if I pluck out my second eye, how will I know where to place the eye? You know, how will I be able to do that surgery? That is when he takes his right foot and places it on the left eye of the lingam so that he knows where the eye is. And pulls out an arrow to pluck his eye. See, Kannappa has done everything which is considered as a terrible thing. Placing your foot on the lingam, spitting water on the lingam from your mouth, throwing meat at it. And yet, when he's about to pluck the second eye, legend goes that Lord Shiva appears before him and says, stop Kannappa, I'm pleased. He grants him back vision in both his eyes. And that's how Kannappa is named Kannappa, I think. And he has become one of the Nayanmars. So, see, again it goes to show, water, even water offered in the worst possible manner, you know, through your mouth, but with what feeling it is done, the Lord is pleased with that.
Yeah, I remember reading this story even when we were at school. As you said, it's the story of one of the Nayanmars, so it's from the Periya Puranam. And this question is very beautifully dealt with. You know, when some people tell the story, you have these you know, those who do Parayanam, they will tell the whole story and they'll give their own twist and they'll give their own interpretation and all that. So I remember reading somewhere or hearing from somewhere that you know, Mother Parvati asks whose worship is, you know, which you like. The story goes that the pujari is also a very, very devoted person. So, you know, the first time when he comes and sees this meat offered and, you know, flowers scattered and all that, he's very, very pained. He says, you know, who's coming and defiling, you know, my Lord's temple? So he cries and he sobs, and then he does an entire cleansing process, which usually there's a ritualistic way of doing it. And every day he does this, and he's so pained, every day he cries. So apparently one day this whole scene happens, and he sees this. Okay, and he's so thrilled to have witnessed a sight of pure devotion. So, you know, the person who is narrating this, he said, see, Kannappa stood for pure devotion, and he got the next level, where he got the Sakshatkar or the darshan of the Lord. And here was this man who was all the time worshipping Lord as in the ritualistic form, but in the best way you can offer, that ritualistic form. So he was given the promotion to know what true devotion is.
And if he has been witnessing the scene, I'm sure he also had the darshan of the Lord.
So each one's offering was accepted, and they were rewarded with the next step. So it is like, yes, you know, you can do the ritualistic offering. It's not like you have to stop that. By stopping your ritualistic offerings, you don't, you know, jump to the devotional aspect. But, you know, we have to keep in mind that this is where we are really heading towards.
And I think with that, we will be concluding our first part of today's discussion, that is the traditional interpretation of phalam, pushpam, patram and toyam. We will possibly play again the clip, Bhagwan's discourse clip that we had played last week, to understand what Swami means, what Swami says is the true phalam, true pushpam, true patram and true toyam. After that, we will proceed with the discussion.
Right, and once again, this is from the summer course that Swami gave in the year 1993 on 24th of May.
పత్రం పుష్పం ఫలం తోయం ఈ నాలుగింటిని సమర్పించమని చెప్పని వేదాంతం ప్రబోధించింది.
వేదాంత సెట్ యు సరెండర్ యు ఆఫర్ దీస్ త్రీ దీస్ ఫోర్
భగవంతుడు ధన కనక వస్తు వాహనాదులకు కానీ లేక అధికార స్థితులకు కానీ ఏమాత్రం కూడా నువ్వు లొంగేటువంటి వాడు కాదు.
గాడ్ విల్ నెవర్ సబ్మిట్ హిమ్సెల్ఫ్ బికాస్ ఆఫ్ యువర్ పొజిషన్ ఆర్ అథారిటీ.
దీనికి సరి అయినటువంటి అంతరార్థము కృష్ణ తులాభారంలో చక్కగా ప్రకటించింది.
The inner significance of this is very well known in Krishna Tulabhara.
Krishnuni tanavaduga cheskovalani satyabhama swarthamainti manasto sarva vidhamainti yaka nagalanta vesindi.
Out of selfishness, satyabhama wanted to own Krishna.
Janakanaka vastuvaharadanta vesindi.
She offered all her property, the wealth and jewelry.
Bhagavantudu thugaledu.
But God didn't balance that.
Tirigi Rukmini vachi.
Later Rukmini is coming.
Deeniki premane pradhanamu aneetunte oka gana upadesham chesindi satyabhamaku.
She taught the lesson of wisdom to Satyabhama.
ee prakrutiki prakruti yokka buddhine enti trulam kudanu kontha avasaram.
For this nature, a natural object is also necessary.
Sanjay Sahani cheppadu Draupadi ki achaya patra lopala taalu bhujinchin tarvata supram chesi pettetunte oka swabhavu Draupadi.
Sanjay Sahani said that the regular habit of Draupadi is to cleanse that vessel.
Kaani ekkado okada inta balusaaku oka chinna mukka chikkindi.
But a small fraction, a little bit of the leaf is noticed.
Deeni Krishna ani Krishna arpana chesindi.
Repeating Krishna's name, she offered it.
Inta alpamaina Krishna arpana cheste kada adhikamainatundi okka deenini Krishnudu andistuntadu.
When such a small thing is offered,
arpitamu cheyaka
without offering
sampadanu manam andukodaniki veele kaadu.
It is not possible to acquire wealth.
ఏదో ఒక రీతిగా మనం అర్పితం కావాలి.
యూ హ్యావ్ టు సాక్రిఫైస్ ఇన్ వన్
బజారుకైనా వెళ్లి ఒక షాప్ లోపల 10 రూపాయలు వాడికి షాప్ కీపర్ మొగాలు కొడితే వాడు మన ముఖాలు ఒక హ్యాండ్ కర్చీఫ్ కొట్టేస్తాడు.
ఇఫ్ యూ గో టు ద షాప్ అండ్ పే 10 రూపీస్ ద షాప్ కీపర్ విల్ గివ్ యూ హ్యాండ్ కర్చీఫ్.
నీవు 10 రూపాయలే వాడికి ఇవ్వకపోతే వాడి కర్చీఫ్ నీకు ఎట్లా వస్తుంది?
ఇఫ్ యూ డోంట్ పే 10 రూపీస్ హౌ డు యూ ఎక్స్పెక్ట్ కర్చీఫ్.
అదే రీతిగా కుచేలుడు కూడా పిటికడు అడుగులైనా కృష్ణుడికి అందించినప్పుడే బహుళ భాగ్యాన్ని అందించాడు కృష్ణుడు.
కుచేల ఆల్సో ఆఫర్డ్ హ్యాండ్ ఫుల్ ఆఫ్ వీట్ అండ్ రైస్ అండ్ కృష్ణ
కనుకునే భారతీయ సంస్కృతి యందు దేవాలయం పోయేటప్పుడు ఇంత పుష్పము లేక పత్రము లేక ఫలము దీన్ని ఒకదాన్ని తీసుకుని పోమని చెప్పని చెప్తుంటారు పెద్దలు.
దేర్ఫోర్ ఎల్డర్స్ సే వెన్ యు గో టు ద టెంపుల్ ఐదర్ యు టేక్ ద లీవ్స్ ఆర్ ద ఫ్లవర్స్.
కానీ నిజముగా విచారణ చేస్తే కృష్ణ నామములకు కృష్ణ రూపమే సరైన తూకం.
Actually speaking, there will be correct balance between the form and the name of Krishna.
Aithe Krishna roopamu form ga untundadi kanipistundadi kantiki Krishna naamamu kantiki kanipinchadu.
But you see the form of Krishna with the naked eye but not the name.
కనుకనే నారదుడు మరొక ఉపదేశం చేశాడు సత్యభామకు.
Therefore Narada gave another teaching.
అమ్మా కృష్ణుడు సాకార రూపుడై ఉంటున్నాడు.
Krishna is in the very form.
ఈ రుక్మిణి నిరాకార నామమును స్మరిస్తే నాకొచ్చిన ఆదాయం ఏమిటి?
When Rukmini thinks of Krishna as the formless aspect, what is the profit?
నాకు దానం చేసింది.
సత్యభామా offered all this.
ఈ కృష్ణుని అమ్ముకొని నేను బ్రతకాలి.
I have to sell out Krishna and live.
కాబట్టి నాకేదో ఒకటి ఫలితం రావాలి.
I should have some profit.
అని చెప్పేటప్పటికి అప్పుడు రుక్మిణి చెప్పింది.
Then Rukmini said,
పత్రము,
either the leaf,
పుష్పము,
or flower,
ఫలము,
or fruit,
తోయము,
or water.
భక్తి కలిగిన వానికి వశుడవౌట సత్యమేనా, నీవు ఈ తులసి దళమునకు తుగుదుగాక.
If it is true, O God, that you submit yourself to the one with the devotion, let you be balanced with this leaf of
tulsi. Dalam vesindi.
Repeating Krishna's name, she gets that tulsi.
Krishna namam Krishnamuniki samanamaina thookam vachindi. Tulsi dalam extra thookam ayipoyindi.
Then there is perfect balance, but this tulsi leaf has become extra weight.
Kanukane manam patramo pushpamo palavanti emiti deeni artham.
So when we say the leaf, flower, fruit, what is the
difference?
The leaf is not of different plant.
They
are sure to decay and
fall.
This very body is the leaf.
Patramo. Idi Bhagavad Arpitamo.
This body, the leaf, is to be offered.
Pushpamo.
Then flower.
Adi Udaya Pushpamo.
That is the flower of the heart.
ఫలము,
ఫ్రూట్,
అదే మనోఫలము.
దట్ ఈస్ ద ఫ్రూట్ ఆఫ్ ద మైండ్.
తోయము,
దెన్ వాటర్,
ఆనంద బాష్పములే తోయము.
ద టీయర్స్ ఆఫ్
జాయ్, ఇది మనకు భగవంతునికి అర్పించవలసినటువంటిది.
దీస్ ఆర్ టు బి ఆఫర్డ్ టు గాడ్.
అది నిజమైన అంతరార్థానికి సరి అయినటువంటి యొక్క స్వరూపము.
దీస్ ది ఇన్నర్ సిగ్నిఫికెన్స్.
ఈ విధమైనటువంటి యొక్క జీవితాన్ని భగవంతునికి ఇది చేసినప్పుడు అతీతమైన ఓవర్ మైండ్ లో మనం ప్రవేశిస్తాము.
When we offer these things, we will reach that stage of our mind.
Part-time devotion ga undagoddu, full-time ga untundadi.
So that's why Swami stops by saying, what you need is full-time devotion. You know, before coming to that last section, which is really going to be the heart of our discussion today, where Swami says, what is a leaf, what is a flower, what is a fruit, what is the water which God expects. Swami is talking about that episode from Mahabharata where Draupadi says Krishna Arpanam and offers. I was just going through another Chinnakatha which Swami was telling, a very beautiful story, where there is this village where there is a temple for Lord Krishna, and this pujari, when he is offering worship to this idol, he would find that when he is offering aarti, a blob of cow dung will come and fall on the idol. Right? And he's very worried about it and very upset about it, and then he goes and tells the elders in the village, and they also come and see this, and they find that every day when the worship goes on, this happens. So Swami says that a vigilance committee was called, and you know, they were set out into the village to find out that who was doing this thing of throwing cow dung or anything related to cow dung during this period when the worship is going on in the temple. So they go around and they find this old lady, and Swami says that this lady, you know, she, there is a practice in India where you consecrate a place by applying cow dung paste. Because it's a natural antibiotic and
antiseptic.
So they use that, and you would, even now if you go to these temples in the villages, especially when you go for Gram Seva, you would see that. You know,
before, outside of the village, right, is swept and mopped with a layer of cow dung.
And even the temples outside will be done, and on top of that they will do the rangoli. So this lady would do that in her altar, and she would put that cow dung paste, and the remaining cow dung paste, she would come out of the house and throw it out, and out of habit, you know, she would say Krishna Arpanam and throw it out. So when she throws like that, that comes in.
Krishna Arpanam means my offering to Krishna.
And when she says that, that comes and falls on this idol of Krishna. And Swami says that, you know, these people are so upset, and they take her to task. They call her husband and say that you better, you know, stop your wife from doing this. And Swami tells so beautifully. He says, see, nobody wonders how the cow dung that she throws here is falling on the idol of Krishna there. They only think that she's responsible for it. And they tell her that you should not say Krishna Arpanam when you're doing this. So then they manage to get this from her as a promise. And then the next day when they go to the temple door is locked and nobody can enter inside. And Swami said that's when they realized that all that Krishna was showing them was he was accepting this offering which was made so, you know, with so much of feeling. But, these people were thinking that you should not, and really that's the idea which we have, you know, we should not chant Swami's name while doing certain things. When you're in the bathroom, when you're in the toilet, you should not chant God's name.
There's a story for that also, if I remember right, about Hanuman slapping a person who was chanting Ramanam while answering nature's call.
Right.
And it is said that when Hanuman lands up in Rama's presence, he sees Rama's cheek is swollen, and Rama says that you harm a devotee of mine, it comes to me.
Right. But all of this goes with the caveat that these people, you know, their offering reached God because they did it with so much love.
The vehicle that carries the offering is love. That is the thing. That is why that is the reason behind this. Because if that love is lacking, then the flower that you offer at the Lord may not be accepted. But when that love is there, you throw a dung somewhere else and it comes and lands on the Lord. So, what is most important is love. Going a little deeper in thought, you know, Swami has said clearly that in the beginning there was nothing. I separated myself from myself so that I can love myself. It appears as though that Advaitic Bhava that existed in the beginning, there's only the Lord, there's nothing else. Maya was brought in and the world was created for the Lord's entertainment. And what was the Lord's entertainment? Love. When only you exist, you can't love. Love can come only when in a dual world. So the Lord says that love itself was the root cause for creation. It is love that is a cause for creation. And isn't it so beautiful that love itself is the cause for merger with the Lord also. So it is only love that exists. It is out of love that the Lord divided himself into himself so that he can love himself. And finally, our ultimate goal is merger with the Lord. We merge back. Some may say, why is this whole futile exercise then? You know, why separate yourself and merge back? Because in the process, it is so much of joy and fun and entertainment. It's almost like, why do you go and watch a movie when everything is fake? You know it is fake, but there is so much of entertainment. So you're ready to even pay money and go and watch it. And, you know, as a side corollary, I think I would like to state it now at this point. When people ask, God created the world, okay, but why did he have to create sorrow? Why did he have to create pain? The same question you can ask to us ourselves. When we make a drama, why do we create villains? Why do we create bad? Why do we create tragedies? When we make movies, why do we make horror? We don't like it, right? And somebody asks this, you say, come on, our movie is not, it's not real. It's just, you don't take it too hard. Just enjoy it. The moment you know that it's not real, you're able to enjoy tragedy, horror, everything. I guess in this huge movie called Life, also the Lord is giving us the same message. Once you know that this is illusion, this is just for entertainment that has been made, tragedy will entertain you as much as comedy, as much as horror, as much as action. So, love is the reason behind creation. Love is the reason behind sustenance. The Lord loves the devotee because the devotee loves the Lord, because of which the Lord comes to sustain the devotee. So creation is because of love. Sustenance is because of love. Even disillusion is for love. Because the devotee is unable to stay away from the Lord anymore. He says, Lord, I want to merge you. The last scene in the movie, Telugu movie, Annamaya, is so poignant. It's so beautiful. The Lord is telling Annamaya, don't merge into me. If you merge into me, who will sing for me? Annamaya says, enough, Lord, I don't want to sing. I want to merge in you. I love you so much. I can't stay away from you. The only way I want to be with you every time, and that's only possible if I become one with you. So you see, even destruction and dissolution is for love. Love is the basis for creation, preserving, and for dissolution. For all the three. That's why Swami says, God is generation, G, organization, O, D, destruction or dissolution. God, the basis is love. That is why it is said, love is God, God is love. So, for all this, when the basis is love, it's so easily understandable why in Archanam also, more than the actual fruit, flower, leaf or water, the important thing is the love or devotion. Devotion, love for God is called as devotion. So, devotion or love is the most important thing. And that's why Swami says, when you say pushpam, flower, it's not just a flower, but your hridaya pushpam, the flower of your heart that the Lord seeks.
Talking about the flower of the heart, I'm reminded of an incident which one of the students shared with us about offering flowers. I'm sure we must have narrated this before, but it's perfectly placed in this part of the discussion. You know, this was the first batch of students who came to Swami's college.
Mm-hmm.
So there were no set patterns. You know, now we have the idea that you come for morning darshan, you come for evening darshan. There's a student's block.
Mm-hmm.
This was like the first batch of students. There was nothing like even they coming for darshan as a group of students.
They can walk in any...
Right. And there was no concept of coming for darshan because, you know, Swami was going and giving darshan to devotees and the hostel happened to be in the campus of, you know, the ashram. So
this is in Vrindavan.
In Vrindavan. So the first 3 days, these boys were going to the colleges and they coming back and sleeping and nothing, you know, like a regular college. So one of the boys got up and he went up to the warden and said, "Sir, can I go and have Swami's darshan?" So he said, yeah, come. You know, Swami will be very happy. You can come and stand inside, just outside the bungalow. And he was told that you just come and stand there. You know, don't go forward or go to Swami unless Swami calls you. So he said, all right. And he goes and stands there. And then he says, yeah, first time I'm coming to see Swami, probably I should offer something to Swami. So, you know, he goes out and he buys a red rose for Swami. He comes there. And Swami comes out and, you know, now when we look and when you say that Swami spends so much time with students, you know, Swami would have been so happy to see that first student coming there and standing for darshan. So, you know, Swami comes in, you know, bright smile on Swami's face. This first student has come for his first darshan and he's holding a beautiful red rose in his hand. And Swami comes to him and, you know, asks, what's your name and where are you from and all that. And this boy is so lost in Swami's beauty and Swami is speaking to him so lovingly. And he's holding the rose and he's talking to Swami. And Swami looks at the rose and says, is that for me? Have you got that for me? He says, yes, yes, Swami, it's for you. And he offers it to Swami. And Swami says, where did you get it from? He says, Swami, I went out and I bought this rose. He says, oh, you went out and bought. How much did you pay for this? So this boy says that, Swami, I spent 8 anas or something like that. And Swami immediately says, you paid 8 anas for this one rose. And you fool, you got cheated. And Swami told him, you know, for this money, you actually can get 4 roses. Somebody has kind of cheated you. So Swami says, nevertheless, and blesses it and puts it in his pocket or whatever, I don't know what Swami does. So the next day, this boy goes back to the hostel and he says, you know what, I went for darshan and Swami came and spoke to me. So the next day, there were 4 boys dead. And smartly, they've gone out and bought 4 roses for 8 anas, right? And then next morning, Swami comes and there are these 4 boys, each one standing with a rose. So Swami comes and says, oh, all of you brought roses for me, and, you know, speaks to them. And then Swami asks, how much did you spend for the rose today? So he said, Swami, today we got 4 roses for 8 anas. So he said, oh, very smart. And Swami said, why do you have to buy roses? And Swami looked at the garden and he said, there are so many roses here. Why do you have to go out and buy roses? And this boy said, okay, Swami, next time we won't do that. The next morning, Swami comes and there are 8 or 9 boys standing there, each one with a rose, and the rose bushes are empty. And Swami again comes to them and speaks so sweetly to them. Swami says, where did you get the roses from? So very smartly and brightly they said, Swami, we took the roses from your garden. And Swami said, oh, you took it from the garden. But the roses were looking beautiful in the plant, weren't they? So these boys were like, you know, their faces shrunk and he said, yes, Swami, they look beautiful. Then Swami so beautifully, he said, oh, but you also want to offer something to me, right? And so what do we do? Then Swami said, see, tomorrow onwards, you come and stand here in front of the bungalow. When I come out for darshan, you look at the rose in the bush and you look at Swami. You look at the rose in the bush and you look at Swami. Swami said, I will accept it. You know, what a beautiful incident this probably happened in the first few days of the college, you know, interaction between Swami and students. Swami said, you know, I acknowledge the fact that you want to offer something and I accept it. That very fact that you want to offer it is enough for me. And all through it was that only, you know, Swami would
not... It's not about the rose.
Right, Swami would not allow us as students to offer anything to Swami, but he always acknowledged and accepted that desire to offer something to Swami.
That desire comes out of love and that comes out of devotion. And that is why, you know, I feel many times when it is said that don't smell a flower that you're offering to the Lord or don't taste the food that you're giving, it should be given. Those are all symptoms of devotion and love. You know, because in the most standard cases, when out of love when you want to offer, you'll try to keep it as clean as possible.
Right.
It's like when I want to if I want to, you know, feed my baby, you know, now the time is coming for her to be fed food for the first time. Okay. If I have to feed food for the first time, how careful will I be in preparation of the food? Because I love the baby so much and I want the best. So just imagine, when I have that kind of love for Swami, if we had to cook food for Swami, how we would do with so much care? And that is, so that care and purity that we maintain is not something that the Lord demands, but it is an automatic symptom of our devotion. But that is only one of the possible symptoms of devotion. In the case of Shabari and in the case of Kannappa, when we see, the same devotion was there, but this symptom didn't manifest. So many times we get attached to the symptom of the devotion, forgetting the actual devotion. One experience that I said that I will narrate, I think I've narrated it before, one of our classmates, you know, he got an interview with Bhagwan in which Swami asked him, have you attended a wedding? Yes, Swami. In the wedding, a feast is made. Yes, Swami. Who is offered the feast first? He said, Swami, all the guests who have come for the wedding. Yes. After the guests eat, who is offered the feast next? Swami, then the close friends of the family, they eat next, because the close friends won't run to eat food first. Then whom the food is offered to? Swami, after they finish, then the family has food. After that, Swami, after the family has had, in the end, the bride and groom eat. In fact, that's what happens when we see in traditional weddings, the bride and groom eat the last. Mm-hmm. And only the closest family members stay back, the closest friends stay back till the end to watch the scene of the bride and groom eating together and feeding each other for the first time in their life, you know, because that's the beginning of their married life. After the bride and groom eat, if food is remaining, who is fed? So he said, Swami, yeah, of course, Swami, since everybody has finished food, now the workers and helpers, whoever helped in conduct of the marriage, they are fed. Swami then asked, what happens if food still remains even after they have fed? Swami, then any beggar, anybody who needs food on the road, anybody who is called, and you know, we do Narayan Seva. This is our low and mean manner in which we think of Narayan Seva, because Swami has said Narayan Seva is when you are serving the Lord. And when we see how Swami does Narayan Seva, how Swami did Narayan Seva physically in Prashanthi Nilayam till 2000, the Narayanas are the poor people who came, the embodiments of God whom Swami would call, that's why Swami called them Narayana. They would be the first to eat. In the end, only others would eat. Here we reverse the case. Whatever is remaining in food, remaining and we can't eat, we don't want to keep it for the next day, we give it off to others and we think we are doing some great seva. Actually, we should thank the person who is accepting it, because they are doing the seva of preventing us from wasting food. Right. That's all. So we are in gratitude we have to give them. So anyway, he said, we do Narayan Seva. Swami asked, after that also if food is remaining, what do you do? Swami, everyone has been fed. Swami, it is just thrown then. After that, food is just thrown. What do? You discard it. And possibly some dog or crow will eat. Swami then said, you know something? When it comes to your love, I am like that dog and crow. You go and offer it to everyone. Those who are, you know, your far away friends, relatives, everyone. After offering to everyone, when there is nobody, you know, you just throw that love away. That also you don't offer to the Lord. That I come and peck at and I am happy. You know, this boy was in tears. And Swami said, that is not the way it should be done. And Swami then said, those who offer their love to the Lord in their youth, I promise you it becomes their right to demand from the Lord whatever and whenever they need. And the Lord will be there because you are offering it fresh first. Swami would compare the youth to a fresh leaf filled with freshly cooked food. So that has to be offered first to the Lord. And don't worry, the Lord will not partake it. Because when we offer a leaf full of food to the Lord as naivedyam, what happens? The same thing comes back to us as prasadam. You offer that food to anybody, they will eat it. And only some lesser amount only will remain. It's only the Lord, when you offer the food, the whole thing comes back to you, you only as prasadam. That is one reason why we take so much interest also and make it tasty, because we know we are going to eat it in the end as prasadam. So what the Lord is looking for is not actually the fresh leaf or the food there, but the love. And love for him means Lord should be the first priority. I feel that is the inner significance of Hridaya Pushpam. Hridaya is the epicenter of love. And when we say we love the Lord has to be first priority. Even giving him second priority means we are giving him no priority.
Absolutely. And you know, going to the other ones which Swami spoke about here, starts with Dehapatram. You know, Swami says that the real leaf that you have to offer is the leaf of your body. Well, does that mean human sacrifice or something? That's not what it is. You know, whenever Swami would speak about the body, Swami would say that this body is a representation of your actions. You know, your body stands for all the actions that you do. And when Swami says that you offer the leaf of your body, Swami says all the actions that you perform, you offer it to the Lord. You know, you do it as an offering to the Lord. And all of that, you know, when you speak about offering love to God, it does not mean that, you know, people should not mistake it that your love is centered only on God and everybody else gets the other side of you.
Hmm.
We see that also with some people, you know, when they come to Swami or, oh, Swami, Swami, and your, you know, all the humility and all the love and tenderness and sweetness comes out, you turn to the others, you know, the other side of you is shown. That is not what Swami says. You will continue to love all the others who come into your life, but you will know that the love that I am showing to this person, I am showing to the Swami within that person. So it's not that, you know,
so it won't lead to attachment,
right,
and other things.
Your love does not become that, you know, I offer it only to Swami and not to anybody else. You offer it still only to Swami through everybody else. And it's the same thing when you say that, you know, the actions have to be offered to God. It's the same way. It's not like we're not claiming that all those who work for the Central Trust are directly working for Swami and only those actions are being offered to God. It's the same thing when you decide that I have to offer all my actions to God. You continue to do actions wherever you are and whatever your stage of life and whatever station of life you are placed in. But now you do it only for Swami.
I remember there was a time, you know, when Swami Bhagwan would come and sit out in the portico and on top the pigeons would be seated. And, you know, every now and then they would be dropping and the dropping would fall right in front of Swami. And there would be students who would rush forward with silken kerchiefs, you know, white handkerchiefs, clean ones, and use it to clean the dropping of the bird. And they would feel thrilled because many times when they would be cleaning, they would be looking at Swami and Swami would look at them and give them a smile. They were ready to soil a nice white handkerchief wiping, you know, bird droppings for the sake of the Lord. That is understandable. But you know, I'm reminded when you said that doing everything, I'm ready to wipe bird dropping when it falls right in front of Swami in the marble.
Right.
But when it falls on my neighbor's cupboard in the hostel, possibly I'll say, come on, clean it, man, you know. I won't touch it because it's bird dropping. There was this Sevadal member, volunteer from the state of Odisha. And, you know, it's amazing the humility and love that the people of Odisha are blessed with. It's amazing. They might be materially poor, but they are so rich spiritually. I am talking this from personal experience. I have gone there. It's such a beautiful state because we learn what is love, what is humility. It's amazing. And so it is only befitting that they produce such an exemplary volunteer. It was during one of the birthday celebrations when lakhs of pilgrims and devotees would come here. One of the sanitation drains had got blocked. And you know, I'm not talking about bird dropping. This is a sanitation drain. Just imagine. And it was blocked and nobody had an idea how this should be cleared. The Sevadal came and he said, Jai Sai Ram, you know, took Swami's name, opened his shirt and dived into that. And with his own shirt just cleaned up the clog. So that all the drainage could then go flow through easily. It was amazing and unbelievable that somebody could do something that is so, that makes us feel so yuck, you know. How can you dive into that? But he did it. And after that period of time when the celebrations were complete and Swami was giving Padnamskar to all these volunteers, nobody had told him any of this. But Swami stopped exactly at this volunteer and just announced that this volunteer is an exemplary one and for what he has done, he will have no more births. No, it's amazing. You know, he was rewarded with the greatest reward ever. Not for anything that he did in Swami's presence, but because of the love with which he did. It's amazing, you know. I don't know where that Sevadal volunteer now is or what he's doing. But it's just thrilling to know that nothing goes unnoticed by the Lord. As Swami says, Sarva Deva Namaskar, Sarva Jeeva Namaskaram Keshavam Pratigachati. The prostrations and salutations that you offer to any being reaches me. So, that is why Deha Patram, use the body to serve everyone.
Coming to this third one, which probably is a little tricky, where Swami says Manophalam. What is that when Swami says that Manophalam, the fruit of the mind?
Uh-huh.
It's very difficult to understand that. Before we come to that, I'm reminded of what Professor Nanjunde had once shared. This was when he was a lecturer in Vrindavan in the early 1970s, 74, 75, something like that. And it was one of the festival times. It was Janmashtami time when Swami was in Parthi. So he and another lecturer decided to come to Prashantanilayam to have Swami's darshan. So they were coming and they were, Chitravati was in Spate, so the buses were diverted, they had to come through Kadri and, you know, the longer route. So by the time they reached, the festivals were over, the evening darshan was over, and I think Swami had retired back to his room. So they came and the mandir was empty. So one of the caretakers of the mandir was there and, they requested him to inform Swami that two of the lecturers had come from Vrindavan. So it was informed to Swami and immediately Swami said, yeah, call them to Swami's room. So they went upstairs and there Swami Karunananda was sitting and doing Padaseva to Swami. And apparently just when this message had come, Swami was telling Swami Karunananda that this Nanjundia is coming, he's carrying such and such a bag, the bag has such and such contents, and all of that, okay. And so Professor Nanjundia comes and Swami says, hey Nanjundia, you come, you know what, just now I was telling Karunananda that you're coming. And Swami said, ask him. You know, and obviously he said, I'm not going to ask him and he's not, you know, going to confirm, because obviously Swami has done that. So he was very thrilled that Swami was sitting and thinking about him, you know, if not anything else, that Swami was thinking about me. So he was very happy. So, you know, he said, he thought probably it's a good time to get a few things done, right? So he looked at Swami and said, Swami, I've got a garland. Can I offer it to you? Swami, with all enthusiasm, yes, come and put it on me. So he was very thrilled and he got this huge garland, which he had got it all the way from, you know, probably picked up somewhere on the way. So he garlanded Swami and he said, I was so thrilled that, you know, Swami, let me offer this garland for him. And then he said, Swami, I've bought some fruits. Can I place those fruits at your feet? He said, come, please. You know? So he was all the more excited. Oh, Swami is giving me all that I'm seeking today.
He's getting Archana Bhakti.
Archana Bhakti or whatever you would call that. So, you know, traditionally in a plate, he put all the fruits and he placed it at Swami's feet and he took Pad Namaskar, Sashtang Namaskar. And then in all devotion, he said, Swami, can I ask you one question? So he said, surely, definitely ask. So he said, Swami, is it enough if we have bhakti alone? No, bhakti okte unte chala, Swami, he said. And he was in his mind expecting an answer that Swami would say, yes, if bhakti is there, God will take complete care of you. You know, that was what he was expecting as a response from what had happened in the past few minutes, you know, where Swami was so, welcoming to all the gestures that he was there to perform. Then, you know, what Swami said, he said, it really pulled him down from the seventh heaven that he was in. Swami said, if this is the bhakti that you're referring to, you know, referring to what he had done just then, he said, if this is the bhakti you're referring to, this bhakti will only be a burden on my head and it's of no use to you. Right? The idea of offering a garland and offering a fruit. And that is why when Swami says, offer mantra,
Manophalam.
Manophalam. You know, when you made that reference to you offer your love to God and not to the others around, and you still offer love to others as a medium. You say that I am offering love to Swami through you. And very beautifully you said that that is when you don't have attachments. And attachments is something which comes in the mind. It's not something which is physical. You know, it has expressions physically, but attachments comes in the mind. And when you start offering love to everybody as you're offering love to God, and you know, there is no attachment, and that is the fruit that you offer to Swami. you know, that attachment which rises in the mind, you offer to Swami and you say that, Swami, I'm doing whatever I do to anybody and I don't, you know, expect any fruits from that because I'm doing it to you. So the idea of having fruits from your actions goes off and you're actually offering that at Swami's lotus feet.
Beautiful. Another way of looking at the same thing, you know, that comes up is, Swami says that mind is nothing but a bundle of desires. Desires are like the threads that constitute the fabric of the mind. Start pulling out the threads one by one. Start pulling out desires one by one. In the end, there's no mind left. So when we say we are offering the mind to the Lord, it means that we are offering all our desires to the Lord. And I feel this is where something that Swami has given at an organizational level, the practice of sealing on desires. We had, two detailed satsangs on that concept. I think that's where this comes into importance, you know. Putting a sealing on our desires. Any desire that is not for God, we try to limit it. Because we want to offer our mind to God and God alone. Which means, I want to desire for the Lord and Lord alone. That is what, you know, comes as another way of looking at offering manofalam. You know, looking at these three, Hridaya Pushpam, Deha Patram, Manofalam, it's like, I want to offer my love. That is what Hridaya Pushpam is. I want to offer love. But Deha Patram comes to remind us that love doesn't mean only, you know, like what you gave an example now, just offering fruits, this, sitting and telling I love you God, but being a nasty thing to the other society. That's only going to be a burden to God and of no use to us. So, Deha Patram reminds us that you have to express this love by loving the Lord who is in everyone. Doing seva, working for everyone. But then, this question might come, you know, Prem, like, I am disabled, you know, I am differently abled, or I am not able to do this, or I am possibly a researcher in Antarctica, I don't have any society to serve. How do I serve? You know, how do I do? Because there are some limitations in different ways. Geographical limitations, physical limitations in doing work for others. I am a researcher. I have to be 12 hours, 14 hours a day in my lab. I don't find time for doing seva. There, you know, so at that level, it's not about actually using the body. The body being used as a symptom of manofalam. You know, offer the manofalam where even if you're not able to do this, in your heart have desire only for God. Don't run behind money, don't run behind position, don't run behind power. Don't entertain any other desires. In other words, practice sealing on desires and increase your love for God. So I feel each one of these offerings come as an answer to questions that the previous offering, you know, puts forth. So in another interpretation that also comes in the mind, and I'll state it here, is that Hridaya Pushpam, when Swami says, is like the Bhakti Marga, the path of devotion. Deha Patram, when Swami says, the leaf of the body, is like Karma Marga. And when you say Manofalam, when we say, you remove all desire, there's no attachment because I'm seeing the Lord present in each and every one of the beings, that is like the Jnana Marga. Karma Marga is of no use without the Jnana Marga. If I just help everyone, but I forget the fact that I'm actually serving the Lord in each and every one, then it can, as you said, it can lead to expectation, it can lead to attachment, it can lead to other problems. So all the three are necessary to be offered at the same time. These are the thoughts that came in me regarding these three.
Absolutely. I think that is something which Swami would often expect and, you know, remind students. Because it's very easy to say that, you know, this is my life, I have love for Swami, and I love Swami, and this is my life. You know, that differentiation I think most of us do, and that's why Swami says that, you know, Deha Patram is most important. That your body has to be taken along. You can't offer love only through your mind and your heart. Your body also should be a part of that expression. We, of course, the Toyam part is there. We'll come to that probably in the end. There is another way of seeing what is this expression through the body. You raised that very important point. You know, there are a lot of devotees in Scandinavian countries, in Western countries. They live in very affluent societies and they probably don't have an opportunity to go out and do seva.
The poor.
Right. You know, I've come across a lot of devotees who say that, you know, our community and our country is so rich, there is no need for us to go and do seva anywhere. I'm reminded of what happened during one of the alumni meet. you know, there was this session in the Purnachandra auditorium, and Swami gave a short discourse, and at the end of it, Swami said, if any of you have any questions, you can ask me. And there was this one boy who got up and he said, Swami, you know, I really want to do seva, because Swami has told us that we should do seva. And initially I used to go on the weekends and I used to join the local center and do seva. And he said, now my job is taking all of my time and I'm finding no time. You know? So how do we do seva? Swami said, see, if not every weekend, at least one weekend in a month, you go and do seva. Mm. Or at least once in a while, whenever you get the opportunity, you go and do seva.
Mm.
And then Swami went on to say, even if that is not possible, do whatever you're doing as seva. Swami said, whatever work you're doing, you do it as an offering to me. Even that is enough. And I think that is taking this, you know, Deha Patram to the next level, where, you know, you don't say that, okay, 8 hours a day I do my work, and 1 or 2 hours a day I go and do Swami's work. And that differentiation also goes when Swami says, you know, that difference between a part-time devotee and a full-time devotee. You're all the time a devotee. Every act that you do is an offering to God. Every person you turn to and shower love, it's a showering of love towards God.
And I think when you do that, automatically that thirst for excellence, the ability to excel in whatever you do, becomes a part of it. During the Gram Seva time, when all these students had returned one day, Swami came and asked, did you meet Radhamma? They were wondering, who on earth is this Radhamma? So they were saying, Swami, yes, you know, yeah, we... They were trying to find out whether anybody had met any person called Radhamma. Swami said, you don't know Radhamma? And Swami said, that lady who offered you ragi and she offered you buttermilk, one lady in the village had indeed done so. So they said, yes, Swami, yes, we remember. Swami said, that is Radhamma. Then Swami put the next bouncer. Swami said, you know what she is best at? They were wondering what it must be. Some of the students tried to guess, taking, you know, cue from what Swami had said before. And Swami making ragi, maybe, you know, maybe she's the best ragi cook. Ragi is one of the cereals. Swami said, no. She's the best midwife in this world. So they all just, you know, nodded their heads. What else could they do? Swami then asked, why is she the best midwife in the world? Now again they had no idea. Did she receive good training? What? Again, Swami had to answer, and Swami said that whenever she goes to help someone with the delivery, every time she prays and tells Swami, I'm not the one doing the delivery, you are the one who is doing the delivery. And then she delivers the baby. And then Swami added the sentence, when she tells me to take over and I take over, come on, naturally it has to be the best, right? Swami said like that. And you know, it shows. So see, once we do everything what we are doing for the Lord, when we throw cow dung, yes, the Lord receives it. When we have to deliver a baby, the Lord does it and confers the title of the best midwife in the world. See, that is what happens. When we do everything instead of trying to make a separate offering to the Lord, whatever we have to do, automatically we make it an offering to the Lord because we do it for the Lord. It helps even in a worldly sense because, you know, then you become professional.
Right.
That's why it shows that professionalism is the first step in showing devotion.
It's the other side of the coin if you look at it. Mm. Because, you know, here is Swami saying that she's the best midwife because she's offering to me. And Swami is kind of saying that I play my role when you offer it to me. But our side of the thing is, you know, that consciously steps in that if I'm going to make this as an offering to God, it better be perfect. Just like how we said that, you know, a flower cannot be
tainted.
The food that you offer should be tasty. The water that you offer should be pure. Same way that consciousness sets in that if I'm going to make this work which I'm doing as an offering to God, it better be perfect. You know, after all, the customer who's going to pay me, I'm thinking 100 times before making, you know, a presentation in front of him saying that, you know, he's paying me, I better give him, you know, that's professionalism. Mm. And when you say that I'm doing this for Swami, I mean, it's got to be 100 times the professionalism that you would do when you're doing it for a person who's paying you. Because you're doing it only for Swami and there is no way it's going to be imperfect.
Absolutely. With that, I think we come to Toyam, water, in which, you know, Swami often refers to this Toyam in his discourses as Ananda Bhashpam or the tears of bliss. Before we discuss that, I think we have audio clipping.
Right. I mean, talking about the perfection of, you know, the action which you do, I think.
Yes, I'm sorry, I forgot
you
that clip.
Take this example.
Yes, yes, yes. Swami gives an example of perfection in action. Yeah, before we go to Toyam, I think we will listen to that.
Right, I think any number of times we've heard Swami give this example. We'll listen to it in Swami's own voice. This was a discourse which Swami delivered in Kodaikanal in the year 1998, 29th of April.
Italy low.
There in Italy.
Antoni ane chunti vadu unne vadu.
There's one person by name Antoni there in Italy.
Itanu violin chesinchinanku maha suprasiddhudu.
He is an expert in making violin.
Okka violin nu samvatsaram anta kashtapadi chestu vachadu.
Antoni takes one full year to make one violin.
Ee Antoni friend okadu vachi emo Antoni nee okka వైలన్ చేయడానికి ఒక సంవత్సరం అంతా తీసుకుంటే నీ ఆలుబిడ్డలు బ్రతికేటువంటి మార్గం ఏమిటి?
ఫ్రెండ్ ఆఫ్ ఆంటోనీ కేమ్ అండ్ సెడ్, ఓ ఫ్రెండ్, వెన్ యూ టేక్ వన్ ఫుల్ ఇయర్ టు మేక్ వన్ వయలన్, హౌ ఆర్ యూ గోయింగ్ టు టేక్ కేర్ ఆఫ్ యువర్ వైఫ్ అండ్ చిల్డ్రన్?
మై ఫ్రెండ్
సెడ్, మై ఫ్రెండ్,
భగవంతుడు పూర్ణస్వరూపుడు.
గాడ్ ఈస్ పర్ఫెక్షన్.
మనం ఏ పని చేసినప్పటికీ పూర్ణంగా ఉంటుండాలి.
వాట్ ఎవర్ వీ డూ విల్ హ్యావ్ టు బి నెసెసరీ.
ఏదో నా స్వార్థం నిమిత్తమై, నా ఆలపిటలను పోషించుకునే నిమిత్తమై ఆ పూర్ణత్వంలో ఏమాత్రం కూడా దోషం కలగకూడదు.
ఆన్ సెల్ఫిష్ గ్రౌండ్స్ టు జస్ట్ క్యారీ అవుట్ ఎ లివింగ్ దెర్ కెనాట్ బి నథింగ్ షార్ట్ ఆఫ్ పర్ఫెక్షన్, హీ సెడ్.
కనుక భగవంతుడు పూర్ణుడు కాబట్టి అతనికి పూర్ణత్వంగా మనం పని చేయాలి.
దేర్ఫోర్ గాడ్ ఈజ్ ఆల్ పర్ఫెక్షన్ అండ్ వాట్ ఆర్ వీ డూ,
అప్పుడే భగవంతుడు పూర్ణ ఆనందాన్ని అందించగలడు.
దెన్ గాడ్ కన్ఫర్స్ టోటల్ బ్లెస్ టు ఎవ్రీబడి
అని ఆ స్నేహితునికి బోధించాడు.
దట్స్ హౌ హీ టాట్ టు హిస్ ఫ్రెండ్.
అనగా
మీనింగ్
మనం ఏ చిన్న పని చేసినప్పటికీ ఆ చిన్న పని కూడాను పరిపూర్ణమైనటువంటి స్థితిని పొందేటువంటి రీతిగా మనం చేయాలి.
వాట్ ఎవర్ లిటిల్ జాబ్ వి మైట్ అండర్ టేక్ బట్ ఇట్ హెస్ గాట్ టు బి పర్ఫెక్ట్ అండ్ టోటల్.
కారణము భగవంతుడు పూర్ణస్వరూపుడు.
వై? బికాస్ గాడ్ ఈస్ టోటాలిటీ, పర్ఫెక్షన్.
మన పనులన్నీ కూడా పూర్ణంగానే ఉంటుండాలి.
ఆల్ అవర్ వర్క్స్ హావ్ గాట్ టు బి ఫుల్.
భగవంతుని యొక్క అంశము.
Where the spark of the divine.
కాబట్టి అంశమైనటువంటి వ్యక్తి కూడాను పూర్ణమైనటువంటి ఒక తత్వాన్ని పొందాలి.
The spark should necessarily represent, stand for the totality.
అని ఆ యొక్క వైలెన్ను చాలా ప్రసిద్ధిగాంచినాయి ఈనాడు కూడాను ఆంటోని వైలెన్.
Down this day, the Anthony violin is so famous and reputed.
ఈ విధంగా భగవంతుని యొక్క పూర్ణత్వాన్ని నిరూపించే నిమిత్తమై పనులు ఎందుకూడను పూర్ణత్వాన్ని మనము ఆచరించాలి.
In order to signify, in order to experience the perfection, the divinity, our acts are got to be perfect.
That was that discourse, and you know, any number of times you've heard Swami referring to this violin maker, Antony the violin maker, and Swami would say that he would take one full year to do that, and so beautifully Swami described that when you say that I want to offer this to God, you say that God is an embodiment of perfection and what I offer to Him can be nothing less than perfect. And I think that is the excellence that we will strive for when we say that whatever I do, I offer to God. You know, it's not just the seva. Definitely we see that in seva. You know, when people go out to do seva, you know, and you put the best personality of yourself. Mm. The most kindest part of you comes out. The most loving part of you comes out. But when you say that every day, everything that I do, I have to offer it to God, that perfection, we will see that it seeps into every act of us.
And finally, you know, we come to Toyam, which I had just introduced, had said that Swami says Toyam means the Ananda Bhashpam, tears of joy that come from your eyes. That is the water that the Lord is looking for. And, you know, it all boils down to the fact that Swami is concerned only with our happiness. That's why he says, your bliss is my food. Bliss is his food. So, therefore, Swami also says, you know, offer to me tears, not tears of sorrow, but tears of joy. I feel we will be able to do this only when we are able to realize that every moment of our lives is so full of blessing, so full of love for the Lord. Otherwise, whenever we come in the Lord's presence, we'll only have tears of sorrow, tears of desperation, tears of depression to offer. And when Swami says, offer to me the tears of joy, it will be possible to offer them only if we have realized the actual presence of Lord in our lives. That is when we will be grateful every moment of our lives, because of which, when we go in the presence of the Lord, we will not be able to speak anything. we will be able to only communicate in the language of tears, the tears of true joy that comes in union with God.
And that's something which Swami would often say when he would come and tell us, you know, you don't have a castoral face. Because Swami would say that you have to associate love with happiness. If you have complete love, you will have complete happiness. And that is why, you know, Swami would say that God is Ananda Swarupa. Even in that clip which we played, Swami says, if you do this complete offering to Him, then God will come and give you Ananda. Because, you know, that is pure love is pure Ananda. You know, each one is cannot be dissociated. In fact, the sometime back I was listening to a talk which one of our former lecturers had given, Anil Kumar sir, not the translator Anil Kumar whom we heard along with Swami in that clip. The other Anil Kumar was a lecturer of our chemistry department. You know, he was saying this, that he got a very interesting doubt. He said, when Swami says love is so important, you know, the entire discussion today was about love. He said, why is there no reference to the word love or prema in the Vedas?
Right?
You know, you say that Vedas is the word of God, and we say that love is what Swami wants us to follow and wants us to live by. And why is there no reference of love in the Vedas?
No prema.
Right? No word of prema or bhakti or any of this is not referred to in the Vedas at all. So he, when he researched into it, and he, this is what he came to the conclusion. I think we'll play that clip itself. This was a talk which he gave in Dharmakshetra for the Samarpan program. So we'll listen to what he has to say about this.
If you really see in Vedam, there is no word for prema. When prema is the essence, when love is the essence of all our existence and spirituality, why is Vedamata never speaking about love? So when I started going, trying to go deeper into this question, I realized apas, water, is another word for love. Why? In Garga Bhagavatam, Radha and Krishna were walking along. There's a beautiful instance where Krishna explains to Radha. Radha and Krishna were walking along the Govardhana hill, cross the Govardhana hill, and go to the hill name is, the other hill name, Rohitachala hill. What is mentioned there is Rohitachala. As they go to Rohitachala, they find one rishi by name Rubhu Maharishi. Rubhu Rishi, who was standing on one feet and contemplating on Radha and Krishna. So Krishna says, I have brought you here for this purpose. See what happens. So as both of them go and stand in front of this Rubhu Rishi is described in Garga Bhagavatam as one who has the maximum amount of love for Radha Krishna. He is full of love for Krishna. So as they stand in front of this Rishi, Rishi opens his eyes and sees Lord along with Radha there. He is thrilled. Thrilled beyond any description. Starts praising and starts various mantras on the Lord. And slowly disappears and becomes, water starts flowing there. Radha asks, what is this Krishna? What has happened to Rubhu Rishi? Then Krishna says, out of his intense love for me, he has become a river. So water is a significance of love. That's why in Shiva, Shiva loves only Abhishekam. And what he loves Abhishekam is only water. It is a way of saying, I love you, Swami. That's all is Abhishekam all about. Water is only a physical example or a indication or a object to convey that we love Swami. In fact, this very same thing as I was going through further, I realized whole of month, every puja, every ritual in Hindu tradition, whether it be yajna, yaga, daily puja ends with mantra pushpam. And what is mantra pushpam? And Swami used to make us chant this mantra pushpam, which is one of the simplest of mantras, many times. Swami was never tired of listening to this mantra. Yopam pushpam veda, pushpavan prajavan pashuman bhavati, chandramava apam pushpam, pushpavan prajavan pashuman bhavati. What does it mean? If you realize that everything has come out of water, you become the all-knowing. You become the one who is the most prosperous. You become the one who is the most successful. What does it mean? From water? Sun comes from water. Agni, Vayu, Sun, Moon, Nakshatra, Parjanya, Samvatsara. Right? All of these in that order. All of them, if you realize that they have come from water, that their source is water, you realize that everything, you are the greatest in this world. What does it mean? That the source of everyone, whether it is the sun, the moon, the Agni or the Vayu, it is their love for God which is their source.
So that was the beautiful interpretation which I thought we'll share with all of you. It clearly says that really, you know, when you say that you offer Abhishekam, so I was referring to that act of doing Abhishekam to the Lingam, it's nothing but saying that I'm offering my love. And the idea that water is actually nothing but love. You know, when Swami says Toyam, you are offering your purest love to the Lord. And that physically maybe is represented as your Ananda Bashpam or tears of joy, as Swami referred to in the discourse clip.
You know, going in a very physical sense, in the fruit there is water, in the flower there is water, in the leaf also there is water. So I think if we offer our Hridaya Pushpam, our Manofalam and our Deha Patram to the Lord, automatically Ananda Bashpam will be the result. So I think with that our Archanam to the Lord will be complete. When we offer the, just to repeat, when we offer the flower of our heart, the leaf of our body and the fruit of our mind.
And probably just before we end, that final thought, which maybe we can conclude with, is the question of what do we offer to God? You know, we've been speaking about all the pure offerings that you make. What about the impure offerings? Because we are not all purity. We are a conglomeration of purity and impurity, good and bad. Does that mean that we can offer only which is good about us to God? Swami would very often say this, and when we were talking to Brother Sonam, he was telling that at one point an interesting incident happened, that he had to come to Parthi. He was a student in Vrindavan, and he had to come to Parthi for some purpose, and the warden told him that since you're going to Parthi, why did you take all the students' letters? You can offer it to Swami, and you know. So he said that act gave him so much of ego. You know, here am I going to Swami with all the prayers of all the students. And he was sure that Swami would see him and Swami would speak to him, because he's a bhajan singer, he'll be sitting right in front. And after he went there, I think first 2 days or something, he gets ignored. And then it strikes him that I'm coming in front of Swami with all my ego. How can Swami ever, you know, accept it? So he's very upset with himself. And when this realization struck him, Swami calls him for the interview. And in the interview, he said, Swami, so much of ego, what do I do with it? Swami said, you have ego? He said, yes, Swami, a lot of it. You like your ego? He said, no, Swami, I don't want it. Then if you don't want it, why are you holding it? Offer it to Swami, he said. So every time this thought comes that, Swami, my ego is coming, or Swami, there is pride, Swami said, Saishwar Arpanam. Just say Saishwar Arpanam and offer it to God. And Swami would very beautifully say that, you know, whenever Swami is speaking about Krishna Arpanam, Swami would speak about Mother Meera. You know, when she's offered that bowl of poison with the idea that she has to be killed, as is her habit, she says that everything that comes to her is offered to Krishna first. And she says Krishna Arpanam and drinks the poison, and that poison becomes nectar. And I think Swami would say that that is the thing, you know, what comes to you, harm you, when offered to God becomes Amritam. You know, when you say poison, it leads to death. When you say Amritam, it leads to immortality. So what can give you death will be transformed into what can give you immortality when it's made an offering to God.
With that, dear listeners, we come to the conclusion of this satsang on Archanam. We are grateful to Swami and the Swami in everyone, because of which we have been able to enjoy this elevating experience ourselves. As always, you can write to us your feedback at our mail ID, which is listener@radiosai.org. With this, we come to the conclusion of this marga, and the next fortnight we shall return to the Ramkatha Rasavahini, as has been the practice. We'll now leave you with a song, on the other side of which where you will be greeted by Brother Chandu with his segment Love to Love.
Samarpayami Aham Udara Kamalam Samarpayami Aham Hridaya Kamalam Samarpayami Aham Hasta Kamalam Kamalam samarpayami.